Welcome to the Real Talk of Dental, where we pull back the bib and talk about what's really going on beneath the surface. Not just the charts, not just the systems. We're talking about the culture, the chaos, and the confessions. I'm Brandy Marzolino, and with 20 years deep in this industry, I am fresh out of patience for performative leadership. This is your space to laugh, cry, question everything, and maybe shout into a pillow between patients. We've got anonymous confessions, we've got call-ins, we've got ops room drama, and we've got the truth, served hot and a little too real. Think of this as your backstage pass to the break room no one dares to mic. Until now. Hey, before we get started, I want to tell you about something that's changing the game for women in dental leadership. It's called the Empowered Leadership Experience for Women in Dental. It's a six-month transformational journey for women who are done with burnout, over-functioning, and trying to lead like someone they're not. This isn't just another leadership training. It's a coming home to your voice, your power, and your joy. If you've ever felt alone at the top or stuck somewhere in the middle, this one's for you. Enrollment is now open. Head to leadhership-experience.com to enroll. Because real leadership isn't about performing. It's about remembering who you are. Now, let's get into today's episode. Dr. Jeff Grove is the head of Ascension Coaching. He went from helping run a 10-location dental company to now being a leadership and personal development coach for new dentists, helping them navigate the pathways of being a practicing doctor in today's landscape. In today's conversation, we dive into some pretty real stuff, which is the heartbeat of this podcast. We talk about his striver mentality, how he went from working alongside his dad in a partnership to buying him out, going up to 10 offices, and then having some critical life moments that changed the trajectory of the next steps he was going to take in his life. Jeff's story, I admire so much. I think he really deals with a lot of what many doctors in our industry deal with in really wanting to have that level of success, aspiring to be all the things to all people, and that competitive nature to finally get to the top of the mountaintop and realize the view and the experience is not what you expected. He then had to reevaluate what was really important to him in his life, make some different changes, relocate to Colorado, where now he is enjoying his family and the great outdoors in ways that he never expected. Only several years ago, he was in a very different place. This conversation is the kind of conversation I love having. I know you're going to get something from this episode, and he's just a really cool dude that I think you'll have a lot of fun listening to. Jeff, I'm so honored and excited to have you with me today, and I've really gotten the chance to know you over the last year, and even your wife as well, which has been like a huge gift, and I absolutely love your honesty and vulnerability in sharing your experience as owner doctor and where you're at today and the path that you took. And you're so honest that I've just been really excited about having this conversation with you today because I know people are going to be able to relate and really appreciate what you're going to talk about today. However, I kind of wanted to start off on the fun side first because I saw one of your answers on the questionnaire, which is your love for Pearl Jam. And I am also a huge Pearl Jam fan. And I have one of my favorite concerts of all time was Pearl Jam in the year 2000 at the Key Arena in Seattle. It was called the Key Arena at the time. I don't know what it is now, but it was in Seattle Center, and I had just moved to the state of Washington, and I was living in Bellingham, and it was one of the first weekends that I was there, and me and a few friends had driven down to Seattle for the show, and it was the second show. I believe they played two shows back-to-back because it was like their hometown end of tour. And it was hands down the most incredible concert I've ever been to in my life. The fans were just going insane, and Pearl Jam was just off the hook. And it eventually made its way onto their touring band DVD, a bunch of clips from that show. And yeah, they've just been a huge thread in my life. And I know you said that you've seen them many times as well. So share with me a little bit about your love for Pearl Jam.
Oh, thanks for having me, Brandy. And what a great topic to get started on. I mean, normally we dive right into dental stuff and business stuff, but man, I could talk about Pearl Jam all day long. How much time do you have? And I know you're a music fan too. You mentioned Bob Dylan and some artists, you know, when you and I were getting prepped for this. Gosh, ever since I first heard the album 10 when I was in high school, I just loved Pearl Jam. I know every song on that album and what order it's in, you know, and we've lost with Spotify and some of these other music streaming services. We've lost kind of the aura of the album. But, you know, Pearl Jam to me is just this band that continues to withstand the test of time, continues to put out great music, put on great shows, stay together, you know, which is really hard for bands with all the, you know, sex, drugs and rock and roll and the pressures and, you know, but besides their drummer that they've, you know, had a couple different drummers. And unfortunately, you probably heard Matt Cameron retired. Yeah. So they'll be looking for another drummer, but I'm just their lyrics, the music, the shows I've seen, the times that I saw those shows in my life, the people that I was with, just the memories that it created for me. I can tell you've had the same experience. I'm so jealous that you got to see them in Seattle because they always pour it on in Seattle, you know, being from the Seattle grunge scene and getting started there. So, gosh, I don't know. I could just, they've just touched me in so many ways, like their music. And I love music and love playing the guitar. It's one of the ways I release. And it's hard to play Pearl Jam songs on an acoustic guitar, but you know, I'm giving a stab at it any chance I get.
I love that. I know I could talk about music all day too. And Given to Fly is one of my favorite songs. That's like usually in my top five, I would say. And just the story of that song, I just really relate to it. And anytime I'm in a mood, you know, and I need to get out of it, I can always put that song on and it just takes me to a different place. But I was really happy to see that.
Beautiful.
Mutual love.
Yeah. I got to see them this summer in Missoula, Montana, with my oldest son.
Nice.
And his first Pearl Jam concert. I told him if they, you know, everybody shut down after COVID and you're like, you know, is a band like Pearl Jam gonna ever go on tour again? Please God, hope they do. And you know, they put out their new album and then went on tour, did their European leg, came back to the United States. And their first stop on their United States tour was Missoula, Montana, which is where Jeff Ament, the bassist, is from. So again, real hometown feel. And long story short, you know, like the sun's falling over the mountains and like it's just an incredible vibe. We're like 10 rows from the front. I've been in the 10 Club for a long, long time. So I get access to two pretty good seats. I love how Pearl Jam does that for their fans. And Given to Fly is what they open up with. It's just like that riff. You know, that Led Zeppelin inspired riff.
That's incredible. Man, now I'm jealous for sure. Well, yeah, I know. I love that they're still touring too and giving it their all like they always have. And I'm really grateful that they've taken care of themselves over the years as well and didn't kind of go the way of some of the other bands that we love from the 90s. So yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so now to a less, I guess, rock star career, but you've had a really, you know, interesting path in dental that I know a lot of people could relate to, but you experienced a lot of success in your career and then you decided to sell it and let go of that identity that you had owning, you know, multiple offices and starting a whole new life. And well, I guess, how long have you been in Colorado now?
4 years.
Four. Yeah. So, and then moving to Steamboat Springs, which is so beautiful, and creating this new life for you and your family in Colorado. So one of the things I really love and appreciate about you is your honesty about what it was really like and the things that you were dealing with. So share a little bit about what people don't talk about, you know, being in that striving place and really pushing for that level of success that most people think they want. But then when they get there, they realize, oh, this is not what I expected it to be.
Great question. So much to unpack there. When I look back on my career, the successes, the failures, the growth, the times things stalled, the times I was happy, the times I was miserable, most of my best memories were in the times when I was still on the smaller side, when it was just me and a really great trusted team of people. We built one really, really big, but still, let's say harmonious, integrated, team-oriented office, where again, we just had some amazing doctors, some amazing hygienists, great leaders. I can't give that team enough credit for helping me build that one big group. And when I got to that point where I had that one larger office that I sort of thought was probably going to be my like dream and my ending point, beyond that, it really didn't get a whole lot better. There were moments, Brandy, but there was a lot of also just chaos, uncertainty. I guess for doctors that maybe are thinking about continuing to expand and like doctors that maybe have that adventurous spirit and think like, oh, you know, bigger is better and more and get more offices or, you know, buy a bigger building. Like, just make sure that you're doing the best you can with what you have. There's probably things that you can improve with the model you have, the people you have, the practice that you have before you just get bored and feel like I've got to just dive into and bigger is better. I know there's a lot there and fire away and, you know, pick apart any questions of that. But I think just the main thing I learned was that like, as we continued to grow, things got more challenging. I became disconnected from some of the aspects of the business that I liked the most. And it really kind of just sort of sped up my burnout and kind of dissatisfaction with kind of like the whole get as big as you possibly can get thing.
Yeah. And I know you've done a lot of work on yourself, you know, since that period of time. And this is a lot of what you support other doctors on now too. So I guess in hindsight, where do you think that striver mentality came from? Because this is something I talk a lot about as well with, you know, people that I work with is where it's sort of a blessing and a curse because it's, you know, it's what gets us started, right? It's that initial drive. And that perseverance and, you know, sort of that go get 'em kind of mentality. And looking back, I guess, when did you realize that or what played into you putting it into overdrive and that just enough not ever being enough?
Yeah, lots of different factors. You know, it's who I am by nature. I really do believe that we are born with a certain nature, with some certain innate drives, fears, motivators. Years ago, I took the Enneagram test. I've taken the Colby A. I've taken Strengths Finders. Those are kind of the main indexes that I've used to become more self-aware, learn about myself. My wife now is studying and becoming an Enneagram coach. So she's really like diving deep into Enneagram and learning about it. And you know, what I learned about being I'm an Enneagram 3, which is an achiever, which is like, I live and die by my checklists and what I'm getting done. And I live and die by my self-worth comes from this, like other people's perception of me. How well am I doing? And how many things am I getting done? And I really feel like, you know, like in terms of being an Enneagram 3, I was just born that way. That's who I am. My number one strength in StrengthsFinder is competitiveness. And I'm extremely competitive with myself. And I never really achieve, like have this satisfaction of like, oh, job well done. You know, we were on the group podcast today with the coaches group. So it's good to see you twice in one day, Brandy. What a treat. And yeah, what you said resonated with me. You said, you know, like I have a really hard time accepting like positive feedback, job well done. Like for some reason, there's just this innate, like it's never enough and I'm not good enough. And there's more I should be doing and there's more I need to get done tonight. And that's a path to burnout. That's a path to fragile and fractured relationships, especially with, you know, your innermost, your people. You know, when your kids and wife are always seeing that, like, you know, you're trying to cram in one more email or answer one more text or do one more thing to get prepared for the next day, you know, over time, it really gives that, unfortunately, a sense of like, gosh, where do I stand in his life? You know, where am I on the totem pole? And I can see why, you know, at times my wife, kids, good friends, family probably questioned where they stand in terms of priority for me, because it's just always like, what am I going to do next? What am I going to do next? What am I going to do next? What am I going to get done? And it's not a great way to live. I wish I would have learned that some of that a little bit in my life about myself. I think it would have saved a lot of heartache for me.
Yeah. And I guess knowing what you know now, is it more so you just assumed, because something like with me with the Enneagram that I found really fascinating and even StrengthsFinder and all that is, and I had been taking personality tests for a long time, but when I took the Enneagram a long time ago, I had this like aha, because, and I think we all do this, and I share this with people I talk with all the time, is we walk through life with our own set of glasses, right? Like our own lens on life. And until we're really self-aware, we assume everybody else has that same lens, right? So like for folks like you and I, because we like achievement and we're go-getters and strivers and all that stuff, we look at people who don't do that and we're like, come on, what's wrong with you? Like, get it done. Like, there's so much to do here. Like, you have so much potential, you know? And it's so perplexing to me when people aren't maximizing their potential, right? And when I saw that there's 9 profiles on the Enneagram, for example, right? And so you get the results back. And I remember I was with a group of people and they got their results back. And I was so like, how did you answer these questions any other way? Like, what do you mean? I just had this idea that there's this right answer. And like, why would you answer it this other way? It was so confusing to me. And that's when I was like, oh my God, I'm not like everybody else and everyone else isn't like me. And I'm extreme in these areas. So it sounds like what you're saying is, how do you have recognized that you were a little more extreme and not like if you're looking at a scale, you know, you're on the far end of the spectrum when it comes to that achievement or, you know, need to get to the next rung. And maybe you could have pulled it back a little bit to know like, hey, you're going to be okay. You don't have to be pedal to the metal the whole time. Right. Is that safe to say?
It's completely safe to say. And I wish I could go back and give myself a little bit more self-awareness at an earlier age. I love the self-awareness that some of these indexes, especially the Enneagram, the Colby A, StrengthsFinder gave me, but some of it was a little bit too late. And I would love the opportunity to go back. And I completely agree with you. And I'll tell you where that really comes into conflict. And it's come into conflict with me. Like when you're an Enneagram 3 and it's all about like maximizing getting done, where that like collides hard is when you have teenagers, right? And it's just so my teenagers now, the youngest one is 16. I have a 16, an 18, and a 19. But man, their younger years and kind of getting into like preteen and early teen was sort of a blur for me. And I think I was probably pretty hard on them, like driving and, you know, get this done and let's go do this. And I wish I would have just slowed down and enjoyed that time. You know, one of the things you and I talked about and sort of and reviewed as part of our notes for this is like, what could we tell our 15-year-old selves? And thank you for asking that question, because I'm processing and pondering that. And I would have just said like to myself at lots of different stages, just like slow down, smell the roses, enjoy the journey, this is something that my wife taught me through her Enneagram studying. She said like, try to be a more of a human being rather than the curse of the Enneagram 3, a human doing. And what the Enneagram reveals is that the core fear of a 3 is that we're not worthy. Like we're only as good as our accomplishments. Like me, myself, who I am, who I was born as is not enough. Like it's really, I'm measured by what I get done. That's my core fear, is like the rejection of like, I didn't get enough done. I didn't do enough. I'm not important enough, etc. So that just motivates you to go, 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 go. And man, when I realized that like, that's just how I'm wired, I've been working on rewiring myself.
It's hard to do. And I think one of the things I really like about the Enneagram too is it, you know, there's certain books and resources out there where it shows you when you're operating as a healthy, yes, like in your example, a healthy Perfect. 3 or an unhealthy 3.
Yeah.
Right. So you can see the traits that show up and you're like, oh yeah, okay, I'm in the unhealthy zone. And for me, I vacillate between a 7 and a 1. Right. And so depending on, because I've tested, they either come out at top, you know, I've been a 1 before with a 7 right below it, or I've been a 7 before with a 1 right below it. And so yeah, 1s are also perfectionistic, but driven by this sort of moral and ethical compass. Right. And it totally makes sense because I grew up in a very strict, you know, household. And there was a lot, you know, my mother was very big practicing Catholic and stuff like that. And so there was idea of right and wrong, right? That was distilled in us since I can't, you know, since I was out the womb. And so I have this, and I'm like, well, this makes sense because there's this idea that there's right and there's wrong. You're going to, you know, go to heaven or you're going to burn in hell, and you better not make too many mistakes because, you know, and you need to repent, and there's all these things about it. And so of course, there's this sort of moral and ethical conviction that I would have now because that was the environment I was raised in. And there is also the fear of, like we talked about earlier on our other call, the fear of not getting it right, you know, because there would be that I'm bad, you know, I'm bad if I don't get it right. And so when I cried when I started reading about the one in the Enneagram, when I first started being exposed to it, because I just had so much compassion and empathy for myself. And I was like, oh man, this makes so much sense. And this is why I was operating this way for such a long time. Because I used to fantasize about being a rock star when I was a kid. And I wanted to be a rock star because I was so jealous that they could be whatever they wanted to be and people would love them. They could wear whatever they wanted to wear. Like, you know, Eddie Vedder, for example, he can just do whatever he wants, say whatever he wants, you know, wear the ragged clothes, whatever. And people are just going to fawn all over him and think he's a genius and he's amazing. But if I'm not perfect and have it all together and, you know, get straight A's and captain of this and that, then I'm not love, I'm not good, right? And everyone wants to be inherently good, right? And so that was so eye-opening for me in that way. And like you said, that's when like some of the healing, you know, that added to my healing that I was already on, essentially.
How are you pursuing your rock star dreams now that you've come to grips with all of this?
Well, we got this podcast, dude.
All right, cool. I didn't know if you were still rocking out, playing it.
I got a mic in front of me now. No, I'm just kidding. But I think what has really transpired for that is just this unapologetic love for myself now, where it's like, and similar, you and I are similar in age, and it's just at this time in my life, and maybe that does come with age and experience or whatever, but it's, I don't care as much what people want to say or think about me. And I say that not with any sort of animosity or anger. It's more of, you know, coming from somebody that all I did was care what people thought about me, because that meant I was good or I was bad, right? It was sort of the perception of others that defined whether I was always being judged, right? Because that's kind of, again, the environment I grew up in was judgment day every day, you know, to whether I was going to be considered good or bad. And so now I'm at the point where it's like, I care deeply about the people I care about, right? And what they think of me. And because that's important, right? The people that I really respect and the people that I admire, that matters to me. But if people aren't going to like me, that's okay. And I don't like everybody either, right? So I have to just remember that there's people I really respect and appreciate and like, and there's people that I don't resonate with. And everyone has that right. And so I'm not overly consumed with the people that don't resonate with me anymore as I am the people that, you know, we resonate and we have similar energy. And so that's been a huge relief to me. And that's allowed me to be more fully self-expressed and just share. And if people like it, awesome. If they don't, then that's okay too. But I don't have to take it in as, you know, that's what I am. I'm bad, you know?
Yeah. And that must have been it. I mean, when you talk about your environment growing up, sevens are fun. Like sevens love to have fun, right? You love adventure. I can just tell that by the questions and the time you and I have talked. Like, you know, you don't want to miss out on anything. Like you want to be in the center of all the fun and activity. And that's an awesome quality. My best friend out here in Steamboat, who's also like a world-class coach, you know, as you are, and mentor, he just does general business stuff, coaches CEOs, he doesn't do dentists, but he's a seven. And he is just like the most fun, you know, always just suggesting like fun, crazy, you know. I'm like, Nick, when are we going to do that? Like, we have work and kids and football practice, got to take the dog out. Like, it's like, we got to do this.
Yeah. And the downside of the seven is that, you know, not having enough adventure, you can feel like, you know, you're not living life to its fullest, you know? So it's an interesting place to be in where you have this perfectionistic nature and you also want adventure and diversity and fun all the time. So it is, and I joke, I mean, people look at my websites, you know, and there's varying different styles and brands and things like that. And, you know, my podcast website has a very different look than some of my other websites. And it's, people are like, whoa, that's a cool branding. And I'm like, yeah, that's one of the parts of me, because I have so many different parts of me. And that's something that I'm embracing as well. It's like, I don't have to be so rigid in just like being this one thing, which is me releasing some of that rigidity that can come with perfectionism.
I could have guessed you were a seven, because what you emote in everything that you put out to the world is like fun, energy, engagement, very people oriented, connection, relational. And that just fits you to a T. Isn't it funny how we're just born this way?
Yeah. Yeah. And I could have guessed you as a three as well, because you were so prepared even for our conversation today. And I really, really appreciate
checklist,
it.
Checklist.
Exactly. I do want to go back though. Yeah, I love how this combo is talking a lot about the Enneagram. That was unexpected and fun. Fun, right? That's good. But I wanted to go back a little bit to, because your dad was a dentist and you worked for your dad, right?
I never worked for my dad. When I got out of dental school, I was really, my dad had a partner, and I use finger quotes to say that because Dr. Brown and my dad worked in the same office, but they had separate businesses. So it would appear that they were, you know, mutual dental partners sharing a business, but they had their own separate, you know, S corporations or wherever it was structured at the time. And, you know, they shared one employee, one front desk person, they shared overhead costs. They had a great friendship. They were very different, but they complimented each other in a very brotherly, respectful way. And they had their own hygienist that they paid, their own schedules. I always get a kick out of like when a new patient called the office and, the secretary picked up the phone. It was sort of like, well, how'd you hear about us? And if it was a referral for my dad, he got that new patient. It was a referral or a connection with Dr. Brown, he got that. If it was just like, oh, I need a dentist, they just went every other patient, which I think was just like a great way to split the difference 50-50, just kind of old school handshake business stuff. And again, a good friendship. My point is, when I got out of dental school, I was able to take over for and buy Dr. Brown's separate business. After a few years of working together, my dad and I were like, hey, this is working. Let's combine the businesses. So we dissolved those two corporations and combined it. And then we were essentially 50-50 partners, and we worked together for, 7, 8, 9 years, something like that, around that time. And then I said to my dad, like, let's grow, let's expand, let's do more, achiever, checklist, like grow, let's do some new things, let's get better at business. Like, we're kind of falling flat. This is boring. And he was like, no, he was satisfied to just kind of go in and do the regular dental thing. My dad liked to read his book, and like he had his little cup of water, and he would just sit there in between patients. Didn't really deal a lot with like the running of the business or the staff, which at the time was very frustrating to me. And sort of like, oh my gosh, now I'm like trying to become a decent dentist, and I'm like dealing with all these like people issues with our staff because my dad just didn't want to deal with that kind of stuff. But it also gave me a lot of like trial and error experience. He would just be like, you deal with this. And I kind of did. Anyway, when we got to that point, I said, let's expand. My dad said no. And so I went to the bank for my first of many times and borrowed some money. And I bought my dad out of the business. And, he became actually then my employee. So he was my first associate, technically. And that's when I kind of owned the whole thing. And I was able to control my own destiny and expand and start investing more money and, new infrastructure and better training and leadership training for myself and business coaching. I spent tons and tons of money on that. All a great investment, all produced a great return. And I built a new building and, just started going from there. And my dad continued to work as an associate for a long time, well into the new building years, probably for another 10 years after that transition happened.
That's amazing. Yeah, what a cool story. And because I was gonna ask, and because I you kind of touched on this, which is clearly you and your dad had different ambitions, right? And I'm guessing he may not have been a three on that Enneagram. But how did your dad relate to your drive? Like, how did it sounds like you had a decent relationship, but was it?
Great relationship, always just super open, loving, supportive. Like, get choked up talking about him, but he never needed the spotlight. He was happy to just like let me go and try things. He was there for me to kind of like, hey, I'll support you and I'm here, but you drive the ship. I like sit back and watch you do what you were born to do. So he was great with that. He completely supportive in every way that he knew how to be supportive of that, and always very honest about what he wanted and what he didn't want, which I didn't have to guess. And he was like, I don't really want to do all this growth stuff. I don't want to travel to cities and take the team and have trainers in and manage all that. I'm happy just to sit back and do fillings and crowns and go home. And that it was that mentality that he had about dentistry. His mentality was dentistry is a job. I'm going to go there. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to build a trusting following of patients, take good care of them, do good, solid bread and butter dentistry on them. And then I'm going to go home to my family and my hobbies. My dad loved to hunt and fish. He has some really good friends. He took us along, me and my brother and sister, on camping trips and spent a lot of time with us. So that's one of the things that actually drew me to the profession, ironically, was like how much he was just like, I can't wait to get the hell out of here, the office. Whereas then I sort of then fell in more to that, like maybe a little bit the opposite of him, more of that, like stay at the office, be the last one there, get it done. And, kind of wish I would have taken a few more pages out of my dad's script. But I think I'm making up for it now, in terms of time and coaching my kids and being available for them and, just packing up and leaving Pennsylvania and slowing our lives down a little bit. So.
Yeah, gosh, you went really hard for a short period of time in the grand scheme of things, right? So how long were you once you bought your dad out? And your dad sounds like an extraordinary man, by the way. Once you bought your dad out, how long were you practicing before you sold?
Well, that whole run, like from the time I bought my dad out until the time we sold the business, was maybe 11 years, something like that. 10 year run, 11 year run. I graduated from dental school in probably it was really the second half of my practicing career. 2016, 2017 is when we had finished the really big office and started to build the DSO, Dynamic Growth, which, you know, grew to 10 practices, you know, and the decision at that point, you know, when you get to that size, you've got investors, boards of directors, a CEO who was not me. I was the clinical director and kind of managed all the clinical stuff, but I was not the CEO at that time. And at that time, like when we decided to sell, that was not completely my decision. That's like, you know, you have a board of directors and it's sort of like, hey, you know, the numbers and the direction are not exactly where we want it to be. And now it's time to, you know, cash in our chips and move on. So I had made the decision before we sold, I had made the decision that I was going to move to Colorado and try to manage and work on the business and still in the business remotely. But by then I had kind of like reached my limit with what I felt I could achieve and, you know, with my engagement, and also had realized that I needed to do some different things with my time, my family. You know, I had a son who was really struggling, you know, we just needed a change. And I needed to, you know, another big part of my history, I don't know if you know this too, but in 2019, I had a mild stroke, you know, whether that was stress induced or just, you know, again, just the way I'm wired, you know, the doctors say it's just the way one of my arteries was wired, but that was scary to, you know, to have a stroke where, you know, I felt like I was in the prime of my career. I was like super healthy, training for triathlons, you know, eating perfectly. And again, checking all the things off my achiever list that said like, you're doing all the perfect stuff and being like this. And that's when I was sort of reminded, like, you know, I'm not in as much the driver's seat and in as control as I think I am. And I had this real scary, you know, stroke incident. And, you know, just from then on, I think like that was really when I started to kind of rewire, reframe, look at things a different way, look at my family a different way, look at my priorities a different way, look at my dad and parents a different way. Anyway, yeah. So I know there's a lot there, but I sort of forgot to mention that as being kind of like a pretty dramatic moment in my life.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's why I respect and admire you so much. And your story has so many parts to it that I think everyone needs to hear and hear you share. And we can always have you on again, too, because I just think you have so much wisdom to bring to people based on your experience. And so even with the stroke, was that kind of your bottom? Like, okay, something needs to change. Was that it for you?
I would say like it was a bottom in a way of like just getting a really icy cold bucket of water dumped on your head. And, you know, I remember sitting in the hospital with my wife with all these wires hooked up to me and they're doing all these tests. And that time they were still trying to figure out why I had basically gone unconscious two times, just randomly, not fainted, but like really been unconscious for a significant, you know, chunk of time. And my brother, who's a physician, when I told him what happened, he's like, that is not normal. Like, you need to get your ass into the hospital and get checked out. And I'm like, no, I'm fine. I just had a headache today. And he's like, no, you really need to like get in and get checked out. And I did. And then I'm running all these tests and, you know, the doctor came up. And in that time, I'm talking with my wife about just how scary all of that was and kind of like, what news are we getting here? Do I have cancer? Did I have a stroke? Do I have some type of heart or brain problem? Did I have an aneurysm? Was it an epileptic seizure or some type of seizure? We just didn't know. There were all these things that we're guessing. But we sat there and we made a list. And we made a list of things that we wanted to do more. And it was like simple stuff. It was like just take long walks, hold each other's hands, talk more, enjoy more time with our brothers, sisters, nieces, nephews. Gosh, it was sort of like this, like, awakening of like all these things that I kind of was like just blurring right through and thinking that achieving was what life was all about. And really I was missing the boat on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, that's so powerful. That really, really is. And something that, you know, we bonded over and then I had the chance to talk to your wife about too was, you know, you as a family dealing with addiction in your family as well. And obviously, you know, I'm really outspoken about my sobriety and mental health and really trying to break down the stigma on, you know, addiction and mental health struggles, because there can still be judgment around those types of things. And I think it's so important, the more conversations we have around it, we can break that stigma and raise people's awareness and compassion around it. And I think so many people are afraid to talk about these things and they live, you know, in fear or fear of judgment, right? Or you and I with sort of the perfectionistic tendencies, it can very easily go to, well, this can be fixed. You know, how do I make it right? What happened? What did I do wrong? And it can be really hard to navigate some of that stuff. But do you want to share a little bit about, you know, that time of your life too, and what you as a family had worked through?
Sure. So we have addiction in on both sides of our family, my wife's side and my family. And, you know, as you know, Brandy, addiction can express itself in lots of different ways, you know, and with lots of different stimuli. And, you know, over time, I realized that I was addicted to like the next thing, like the next dopamine hit, the next, how am I going to feel good? And it was like just constantly riding this wave of, feeling good, feeling bad, feeling good. What am I going to do to, what am I going to achieve to try to make myself feel better? Unfortunately, that those addictive genes did not skip our three kids. We have three kids, we have two sons and a daughter, and my older son Brady inherited those traits, and it began to express itself, with problems with drugs and alcohol. And one of the hardest things we had to do was really look at that as like, okay, this is just not a teenager doing normal teenager things. This is a teenager who's off the rails, who is really, really in danger of hurting or killing himself or someone else, and really needs some intervention. This is something he has lost complete control over. So, that happened last year. Again, it was a culmination of a lot of really rough times with him, difficult for our whole family, our marriage, a lot of ups and downs, run-ins for him with the law, DUIs, things like that. And then, finally we got some help as parents and realized that, he needed help. He needed to be in a professional environment. And we put him in an amazing group of people with an amazing group of people down in Kansas City called Crossroads. I credit that group with saving his life. We certainly were helpless at that point to do anything for him. And we took him down there on November 10th of 2024. And he's been sober ever since. He just had his 300th day sober. He's in college down there now. He's studying to become a welder. He's always, had an affinity for the trades and never really been one to love school or any of those things. But he's a brilliant kid, incredible athlete, just handsome and amazing and loving and caring in every way. And he just was stricken with this challenge, and he's been doing great with it, like better than we ever could have expected, So just thank God he's in a good place now. And I know this is something he'll have to deal with for the rest of his life, and it's something our family's learned a lot from, and definitely been a big part of our story and kind of, where we are now and where we're going in the future. We'll be surrounding, supporting, and loving him.
Yeah, it's really beautiful, and talking with you and your wife about it too, and just how you've all navigated it was just really, filled with a lot of courage and understanding and compassion, and those things are not hard to, or that they are very hard to navigate, and you guys did them with such grace, even though probably didn't feel like it at the time. But yeah, and congratulations with your son too.
Yeah.
He's almost at a year. That's exciting.
Thanks.
Yeah, and so I guess with everything you've experienced, right? Because it's been you've really touched on so many big layers that people experience in their dental career. Where you're at now? So now you're coaching, which is awesome. So you're coaching primarily dentists, right? That to really help them navigate a lot of the things that you've experienced with all of your wisdom and experience that you've had. What do you, if you had to distill it into a handful of things that you're aware of now that, after everything you've been through, what would they be?
Great question. A lot there. I'm trying to help my clients with, and most of my clients are earlier in their career. Let's say like 0 to 10 years out of dental school. I have one client that's a little older than that, but I'm trying to help them with self-awareness early on in their career. I'm trying to help them understand some of the things about themselves, natural fears, motivators, the way they're innately wired, that will help them name some of the things that are challenging them. And deal with them, and either learn how to, name something that just some trait or characteristic that they're born with and kind of put that off on a shelf and realize that that trait or characteristic doesn't really play well with being a dentist, or say, that's an incredible strength. That's a superpower. You're an amazing communicator, for example, or you're amazingly futuristic, or you're amazing with harmony. Let's figure out how we can take that natural strength and utilize it to help you build the career in dentistry that you want. Right? Dentistry is still one of these professions where you really can build the life and the career that you want, but you have to be armed up or armored up with a certain set of, skills and knowledge. And I'm simply taking my clients and saying, like, where do you want to go? And what can I do to help you accelerate the curve and maybe get there with a lot less pain? Try to keep you away from like the burnout and the hopelessness that so many dentists are feeling in their career. Like, how can we name some of the things that you're challenged most with and work on them together, with all the different resources and knowledge that's out there? That's kind of like the main thing. And what I realized is there's just so much that I started writing a book. So I'm working on a book. It should be done next spring. And it's really going to kind of be like that, like a guide on self-awareness, understanding the challenges of where dentistry is and why it's challenging, what makes it unique and what makes its challenges unique. And especially for those younger generations of dentists, like I said, that year to 0 to 10 years out of dental school, like what is their generation, you know, every generation has its strengths and weaknesses and sort of like the way it was formed. What about your generation is kind of like colliding with the challenges of modern dentistry and making it difficult, you know, or let's just say different than what you expected. So one of the things I'm kind of running into, you probably do too with your coaching, Brandy, is like the expectations that a lot of these younger dentists had for the profession is very different than the reality that they're experiencing. Whatever they pictured when like Uncle Joe or mom or dad or their childhood dentist, whatever they pictured, they said, like, I'm going to be that person. Like you were like, I'm going to be like Eddie Vedder. You know, they envisioned this picture of like their future and who they were going to be, this rock star dentist. And here's exactly what their life was going to look like. Here's the house they were going to live in, the car. Here's the money they were going to make, time they were going to have with their family. You know, we all do that. We all dream. We all picture. What I'm finding is that picture that they had is coming into like a drastic conflict with like the reality of like their situation and the reality of, you know, the challenges of dentistry and everything that's changed since Uncle Joe or mom or dad put their shingle up and became, you know, a dentist. It's very different mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm. So I think if we name that, we talk about it, we talk about this next generation of dentists, we can kind of figure out, and I'm working on helping them figure out some solutions to help them have a, just say, a less rough path to get to where they want to go.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And I think too, you bring up two things that I like to talk about a lot too, which is I always say self-awareness, key to the kingdom, because if you have no self-awareness, you're in for a world of pain. And I even always say self-awareness is a deal breaker for me in any kind of relationship, whether it's professional, friendship, anything like that. Because it's really hard to be in relationships with people who have no self-awareness, right? Who are just no clue as to why they are the way they are, or just to be able to take responsibility for things. Yeah, so we could go on and on about that. And I've also shared too, I agree, there's been a quantum leap in the dental industry. And you're exactly right. There's like this huge generational shift in... It's not, you know, your neighbor's dental practice anymore. And the way associates came in the past, and yes, the traditional models are still, they do still exist, but there's, I think what's also missing is the mentorship that people can get from the industry. That's where there's a divide. There's a gap there that's really hard to fill, because the people that are able to mentor you were operating in a different industry, you know? Yeah. So it's because in the past, like you got mentored by your dad and probably his partner and, you know, other things like that, that when you entered into dentistry, they were mentoring you and guiding you on what the industry was like. And there wasn't a huge quantum leap in how it was operating. Now, a lot of young doctors are coming out, and especially now that, you know, over half the graduates are women, which is incredible. However, there's not a lot of women mentors, right? Because that stat just changed dramatically over the last, you know, several years. And the women that are around, you know, we've lost half of them in the sense of like leaving dentistry because it's just didn't fit their lifestyle or motherhood, right? Or they never really, there's a lot of dentists, you know, female dentists, but there's still a very small statistic that own, right? That owns an actual office, that owns a group. I mean, that statistic is very tiny. And then women as specialists, even tinier. So for women, there's not a whole lot of mentorship either, right? Because it just didn't exist.
Totally.
So I think you're totally right in needing that level of support, because they're entering into an industry that everyone's adjusting to, right? And you and I thrive on coaching and, you know, by being coached and also having mentors and guides and people to show us the way. And I think there's a huge gap in that for a lot of people, because it just doesn't exist, you know?
It doesn't. And you hit the nail on the head like a million times there in everything that you said. Just one thing that I'll add is, you know, the best female dentists out there that are running, you know, great businesses, they've got private practices, they're owners, the best male doctors out there that are running great businesses, thriving, they figured it out. Let's just say they figured out like some of the secrets and the secret sauce, and they're great communicators and great leaders of their team. They're great clinicians. Those men and women are not in the coaching space. They're not out there sharing that knowledge. They're thriving and putting all of their bandwidth into their running their practice, you know, their family, their hobbies, and living the dream, like living the dream that a lot of young dentists are sort of picturing. So when my daughter did a senior project and she had to ask me a bunch of questions about business, and one of them was like, if you could just say one like secret to your like past success, or like the, you know, like the trajectory that you found yourself on, like what was like the one key to like kind of getting there? And for me, it was seeking out. And a lot of the best mentors and teachers I had weren't dentists. They were people that taught me just fundamental life, communication, people, business fundamentals, again, marketing, real estate, investment, capital. I went out and sought just a lot of that basic stuff. Leadership, like literally making me a better leader and communicator. A lot of that stuff's universal. You can go out and get trained. You don't have to go out and find a dentist who's a mentor. If you feel like you really want to rap about like difficult cases and root canals and stuff, yeah, maybe find like a dentist who's a mentor and a coach who kind of has a, but if you really just want to learn the secret sauce of just like running a great business, communicating with your team, communicating with your patients, marketing your practice, doing all those things that they never teach you in dental school, you don't have to go find a dentist. So I went out, and anyway, the bottom line is I was really great at listening to those people and coming back and implementing things. You go to a lot of meetings, Brandy. I go to a lot of meetings. I'm always blown away. I really believe that a lot of people spend tons of time, money, going away, getting educated, listening to talks, but then they come back on Monday and don't do anything differently. Really good at going away, learning something, coming back and being like, we're doing that. Gather around, yeah. Everybody. We're doing that. We were doing it before, sucked, didn't work, we're all frustrated, it's bad. I learned something new this weekend, and it probably drove them a little crazy, because I would just come in like a bull of the china shop with all these ideas.
Yeah, they're like, oh no, I went to another conference.
This sucks. But
like I said, I'll have to have you on again, because I feel like we could talk forever about
I feel like we barely scratched the surface. I would love that. Let's do a part two.
I know. So yeah, this the preview. But yeah, thank you so much for everything that you shared. I love your story. I love your journey. I always just find it so cool when people go through life the way you went through life and then had an awakening and started making changes in your life and having the courage to do that. And you know, you live to tell about it, you know, and now this is the next chapter for you. And you can take all of that wisdom and experience and bring it forward. And not only are you bringing it forward, but you're bringing it forward in a way to help other people, which is something that I just always love and I admire so much. So thank you for being on. We'll definitely be doing this again. And I'm super grateful for you taking the time to chat with me today.
My pleasure, Brandy. Thank you for being literally my first friend in the coaching. Since I named myself as a coach, you were one of the first people that reached out and we connected and we had a call. Thanks for being so encouraging. Thanks for sharing all the wisdom that you have, for inviting me on the podcast and just helping to make me a little, you know, person on, you know, as part of your success and everything that you've built. So honored to be talking with you today. Thank you.
You just listened to The Real Talk of Dental. If it hit, if it stung, if it made you feel just a little more human, good. That's the point. This isn't about fixing practices, it's about healing people. And if you're brave enough to show up real in this industry, you're my kind of leader. Subscribe, call in, send your wildest workplace confession. And most importantly, don't clean up for anyone. The mess, that's where the magic lives. We'll see you again on the next episode.